Joining me in this segment is our good friend, lawyer, Stuart Gardner.
Hello, Doug. Great to be here.
Well, Stuart, it's about time you came back. We have some issues to talk about regarding the law, and I want to start off with some issues where law and medicine come together.
Oh, yeah. That's just a great combo.
Sometimes it's interesting. Now, we talked in the show a few weeks back, a new law passed as of the beginning of this year to curb junk faxes. But I continue to get a stream of junk faxes in spite of their illegality. One of them advertises how it's going to melt my body fat and trim inches. And no, it's not just another fad diet. It's the first legitimate, scientifically proven blah, 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 blah. But curiously, at the top of the page, this fax comes to me saying, "To Lisa from Karen. Comments. Here's the article I told you about. The product helped me lose weight and inches. Dr. Beauchette was impressed." Now, this is to make me think that I accidentally got sent this fax when it was really meant to go to Lisa. So if I go to somebody later and say, you know what, they're sending me junk faxes, this should be illegal, how do I prosecute? The company's going to be able to say, well, no, we didn't mean to send that to you. That was meant to go from Karen to Lisa.
I've never had a junk fax come to me.
You haven't?
That's a horrible new development. I hate that.
No, it is. I get
that's
one.
That's ugly.
I get several of these a week.
Oh my God! You know, as if just calling us in the middle of dinner wasn't bad enough.
No, they've
and sending all the junk mail so that I can't even enjoy getting the mail anymore.
You know,
now they get junk faxes. Great.
You're like me. You come home and on your porch there's junk mail.
Oh,
it's been deposited in a pile.
I hate it.
You go to your ATM to make a withdrawal, and now you get a commercial, and it delays your transaction while it airs the commercial. It wants you to see the commercial.
Well, you know, a culture that advertises in the urinals.
That's
a
true.
Culture that I just don't know. Well, I don't know when it's going
to
stop.
When I go to the market and there's a flashing coupon dispenser in the aisle, in case I haven't thought to bring coupons that they deposited on my front porch, there is a little coupon dispenser for me. It just never seems to end.
You know, the sad thing with this fax, though, is if you actually did try to sue them,
yeah,
because a lot of times they're just little junk holding companies and they just...
It's a big shell game.
Yeah, it's just a shell game.
Yeah, well, I don't know why our fine products of King Law School and McGeorge can't take this cause up and strike a blow for justice against these horrible, evil empire of these telemarketing weasels.
Yeah, and just think about all the wasted paper and trees and everything.
Forests
else
are being felled
for
this
stuff.
Plus
all the time that you're spending wasting your time because you think, oh my God. This was for somebody else, so you immediately read it.
Yeah, you know, unbelievable. Dr. Beauchette, I hope that they can yank his license, like he's a real doctor.
Yeah.
He plays one on TV. Okay, here's an area. Most people in most professions resent the legislature and resent the legal apparatus, the law stepping in and telling it what it must do. But here's an example where the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, has stepped in to the medical profession that I look at and say, well, it's about time. The feds have now passed a law limiting residence hours. This has been going around and around on these voluntary programs where residency programs were going to limit people, but in fact, they haven't done it.
Oh, this is fantastic. You and I have talked about this often. I've always thought this should be illegal. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
It
probably comes from a time where doctors were trained in battle. And they were getting all the casualties, and they had to stay up for 36 hours at a time doing operations. But it's stupid to have anybody up for more than 10, 15 hours, especially if they're cutting on someone else. I thought it was idiot.
I know many people. Now, and it's funny, too, because there have been some studies now on the whole mind-body paradox showing that, indeed, when you are stressed out, your body doesn't do so well. You're more prone to illness. We all sort of know this is a no-brainer. Of course, it's true. Yet we go out and train doctors 36 hours at a crack.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
I mean, every third night.
So OSHA actually changed this?
OSHA, well, no, not at all. OSHA stepped in and saying this has to stop because, you know, the residencies and hospitals, which, you know, have a vested interest in keeping things the way they are, a lot of cheap labor available, you know, at long stretches of time, they've sort of been, you know, going very slow. This is like civil rights in like the 40s, you know, they make a lot of promises and not much happens.
Yeah, I actually always thought that would be a fantastic class action lawsuit. Just to sue the hospital flat up.
Do it.
Because, you know, it's negligence. It's encouraging negligence. They have a duty to have doctors on call that aren't yeah. leery-eyed.
Well, they're seeking to limit residents to an 80-hour work week with one day off per week and no shift longer than 24. And this is found to be too restrictive. Now, you can imagine you want to fly to Europe and your pilot's sitting there red-eyed, having just flown in from, like, Finland, and he's going to fly you back to Iceland, and he's looking all, you know, bloodshot eyes.
Popping some amphetamines.
Exactly.
Just to try to stay right. awake.
How
but
good would you
that's
feel?
That's even better, though, because at least a pilot, you know, they only have to be alert really for a few minutes while they're landing, but a doctor who's cutting on you in some sort of tough surgery.
Well, we all rail at regulators, but this is one where I'm behind them all the way. Something's got to be done, and I just don't think residency programs and hospitals are just going to do anything about it until they get the cattle prod. Well, we're going to at some point talk to someone at the Med Center about where things stand right now. I know they have made progress, but I'm quite certain that even if it's the Med Center is making great progress, that across this nation, they have a long, long way to go.
Yeah, and the faster the better. A lot of people probably getting injured by very tired doctors, and it just doesn't have to be that way.
It limps along, you know. I mean, the potential, there certainly is some harm being done unnecessarily. I don't think I think they get by with it because there is a lot of supervision to make sure that, you know, disasters don't happen, but it really isn't. It's just barbaric. All right. Some months back, we talked about people getting into court of law and acting as expert witnesses when we talked about the travesty going on at the time in the Carrie Stainer murder case, where the defense was bringing out these idiot witnesses to claim that he was obsessed with Bigfoot and his head was misshapen, and there, so you really can't hold him to a high standard for murdering all these people. Well, thankfully, nobody bought it. He basically was convicted in spite of all of our taxpayers' dollars and all the weeks and months of time that went toward presenting this sort of bogus so-called expert witness testimony. He got the death penalty. And to that, I say, good. Of course, we'll talk about the death penalty a little bit later in the show. But before we do, I wanted to talk with you, a lawyer, about the fact that doctors are now losing their license over expert testimony. I have a copy of the American Medical News, which is a throwaway journal sent out to people in the medical profession. Article here from the August 2002 issue about this very thing. There was an example given of a neurosurgeon who testified for a plaintiff in a medical malpractice case. The medical board in the state had his testimony brought to their attention, and they ruled that he engaged in unprofessional conduct by misstating facts and making statements about what was the appropriate standard of care in North Carolina.
I actually like that one a lot, Doug. I mean, if a doctor's, especially a neurosurgeon, is up there in the stand testifying fraudulently, I don't see anything at all wrong with pulling his license.
Well, not that he was fraudulent. In this case,
seems like a fraud to me if the medical guys all got together and said he's testifying as to that. Which is
wrong. Well, let me give you an example of some. He basically went in and offered his opinion. Now, he asked two people. He asked two economists, two doctors, two lawyers about something. You'll get two opinions. So there's a certain leeway in what, you know, an individual perceives to be factual information.
Yeah, but the reason that experts are hired is that they're supposed to have some expertise.
Well, yes, that's kind of the whole point of a lot of this. They're supposed to, but in fact, many times they do not.
So what's wrong with pulling their license if they're a neurosurgeon and they're so lacking in expertise?
Yeah, well, there's more than one case. I have another article from another case here. I don't want to go into the details of some of it here, but to make a long story short, a guy goes in who's done maybe 20 procedures and goes in as a supposed expert witness to testify against someone who's done hundreds of these procedures, who didn't get a good outcome, because sometimes in medicine, you don't get a good outcome.
Yeah.
The expert witness was hired to come in, and the point was to say, this guy screwed up. He happily obliged, told the jury that, yes, the standard of care is such and such, and this doctor must have screwed up. Well, the accused doctor wound up winning the case and then saying, okay, and now we're going to have justice.
Oh,
he went to the medical board and said, this guy said this in a court of law, and I'd like to know what his basis for saying that is. So they went and they queried him and said, what is your basis? He cited a couple articles. Well, they went and read the articles. The articles said nothing of the kind. And he tried to maintain, well, it's still my opinion. And the board ruled, well, it can't come out of thin air. It has to be based on something. You're looking at a jury. You're looking at a jury straight in the eye and saying, this is the standard of care. This is what should have been done. Mm-hmm. The jury doesn't know that you're full of it.
No.
But medical boards do, and they're going to start nailing some of these, you know, for-hire docs doing this.
Actually, I've got a great story for you, Doug. The State Bar of California had some real financial difficulties a few years ago, and now they've put together a crack team that goes after bad lawyers, and they just put them on a fast track to get rid of them ASAP. And it sounds like this is the same type of thing except for the doctors. I think it's great because it used to be you were a bad lawyer. And I mean somebody who's actually stealing the client's money and disappearing into the night. And you could
still
practice.
That's a bad lawyer.
Yeah, that's not good. it's an embarrassment. And a lot of times they have real drug problems and stuff like that. But anyway, they just get rid of them now. They have like a crack team that goes after people.
Boom, license gone.
Yeah, and it's fast. It's not like it used to be where somebody could basically steal from a few people and then still practice for a few years till the state bar caught up. And I think it's a great thing. And I actually think this is a good one, too, with this doctor.
It's funny, too. The doc that wound up getting his wrist slapped and wound up suing for the impact the ruling was having on his ability to earn income as a expert witness. But they claimed that, no, this is within our jurisdiction. You are practicing medicine, in effect, when you're sitting there in a jury box being sworn in as an expert witness.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I totally agree with that. That's just common sense.
So I think
juries depend on experts, and they give them a lot more weight than they probably deserve.
Well, in the case of some of these psychiatric witnesses that we talked about, you know, in the Stainer case, I just think that, you know, it is basically, you know, it's almost malpractice on the face of it to allow some of these people in there to pretend that they have insights into the criminal mind, into the mind of the mentally imbalanced, any more than you and me and the guy that cuts our lawn. Because in a lot of cases, they don't.
It's quacks.
Well, there's quacks everywhere. So I'm glad to see that, you know, if you're going to go out there and do some quackery, whether you're a doctor or a lawyer, you might get your wrist slapped. All right, now here's a big news item that I know caught everybody's attention this month. And I should preface this by telling our audience you are a criminal defense attorney. And you have defended people accused in the past of murder.
Yes, attempted murder.
Attempted murder.
A parole revocation hearing.
Oh, I
tried
see.
To kill him.
They didn't produce a corpse.
But wasn't successful.
Okay, all right, all right. Well, in the state of Illinois, the outgoing Republican governor, George Ryan, basically on a clean sweep, took 167 people on death row and commuted all of their death sentences to life in prison without parole, which is causing a firestorm of reaction across the country.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It's I can't believe it. Either the governor decided the whole Illinois justice system was so corrupt. To me, it's mind-boggling. I can't believe it happened.
I can understand him reviewing several cases. He apparently reviewed three or four cases and was impressed by the fact that, you know, I guess in some of these cases, he felt
bad conduct on the part of the police.
Well, perhaps so. And he felt in those cases they should be overturned. But how do you then conclude on the basis of three or four that every single prosecution, contrary to the will of the public, to what the legislators have intended, and what the system is set up to do, and contrary to all of that, you're gonna basically the governor step in and invalidate all of it.
Yeah, I can't explain it. I don't know if this has ever happened in the history of our country.
Well, back in the 70s, I guess it was 72, the Supreme Court decided that that the death penalty was being enforced in a capricious manner, and it basically pardoned everybody in the United States, including Charles Manson and his family, who was slated to die, in one big blanket pardon, saying if you're going to put a death penalty in, you now have to meet specific requirements. They took some of the fuzziness out of it.
Yeah,
made
I
it
can
very
understand
specific.
That, but that is a judicial body making the ruling. That's not an executive officer just saying, you know what, the whole system is just garbage.
You know, he ran for office as a proponent of capital punishment.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing, a Republican and somebody who all his life had been pro-death penalty. And, I guess he actually had to make some of these decisions on whether or not to execute people and got cold feet. I think he actually witnessed one of them. And,
he put a moratorium 3 years ago on future executions. And then on the way out, like 2 days before he leaves office, he sends a letter to all the victims' families and said, oh, by the way.
I actually think the victims' families and certainly the prosecutors and everyone else that had to waste their time, they're the real victims of this whole thing, if you do believe in the death penalty, which...
Well, personally, I do. I am 40-something years old, and I know three people that have been murdered. And that's just the way it is in America. I think that one person actually is a presumed murder victim. They never have found her. And it's my belief she probably fell afoul of a Ted Bundy-type individual. And, you know, as far as people like Bundy go, my feeling is that there are some folks that have worked so hard to earn the death penalty that it's wrong for us to deny it to them.
Yeah, I agree with you, Doug. But the sad thing is, this one governor pardoned them all. Yeah. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm kind of.
It's interesting too, because it's going to really open up the debate for the death penalty and whether or not to have it, and whether or
but
not.
There
it's
seems
cruel.
To be no groundswell following his move.
No, not that I can see.
At this point, no.
There's almost the opposite. I think most people are enraged at what he did.
Yeah.
I just think it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when you do a blanket one like that, I mean. Hell, well, if he had 167, did you say?
Well, that one count is 156, 167. I think that he did 13 before, and then he added like 150-something more. But it's a lot of people.
You would have thought maybe he would have taken the top 30 that he thought were just unjust.
I mean, I can.
But just the whole, all of them. I mean, some of them have got to be people who are caught in videotape executing other people. It's just ridiculous to pardon all of these guys.
I agree. I can understand a crisis, you know. I can understand someone, you know, doing what he thinks is right, following what he thinks is ethically correct. And I take my hat off to him for doing what he thinks was the correct thing, even if it's politically unpopular. But surely, you know, if he did it on a case-by-case basis and let a lot of people off, you could justify it. But I don't see how this can be justified. Now, you know, I probably would feel different if I was, you know, against the death penalty. People just seem to applaud it. Again, it's kind of like other issues. It depends on where you stand on it. You say it's great or it's bad.
Yeah.
It's hard to be objective.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, the law is what it is. And if people go through there and a jury decides, my God, this person did such a bad thing and the worst penalty we have is death and he deserves it. After you go through all the appeals and everything, you just let them all out of jail because you feel bad about
well,
it.
Well, in this case,
especially with something like this, where you know you're leaving office,
right?
And it's just, to me, it's a cop out. I don't.
Now, the governor claimed that he felt that some of these confessions had been coerced. Certainly, that happens in the real world. Confessions can be coerced, and you know, before we leave the topic and take a break, I should. Ask you what you think about the fact that this case in New York City, the famous jogger, five guys were convicted for her brutal attack and rape. It turns out that they were not the perpetrators. It was now proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that another violent serial rapist had been the man who raped her and, you know, injured her, left her for dead, and surely could have killed her by the injuries he inflicted. So these guys confessed. Now, does that make them innocent? They confessed to a rape. They described a rape from my understanding. They're all describing, yeah, and then I did this, and then I did that. It seems to me that what this means is that, you know, they were convicted of the wrong rape.
Yeah.
So they're not exactly innocent young youth as they're being portrayed in certain segments of the media. On the same time, you know, the system got it wrong.
You have to stick to what's right, though. I mean, you have to be able to match up the victim with the perpetrator.
Right.
And obviously, if you can't find the victim,
right. You
need to let the perpetrators go.
I agree with you from a legal standpoint, yes.
But these guys, they're so obviously deserving of punishment.
Well, I mean, I don't think they talk about wrongful confessions, but they were confessing to her. I mean, it seems to me they were confessing to a real crime that they were describing that they just so happens weren't convicted of.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you have to let some of them go.
No, I agree. In this case, I have to agree.
Unfortunately.
You're listening to Radio Parallax. I am Douglas Everett. This is KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a break.